Bremen 2 Gesprächszeit.
A very warm welcome. My name is Julian Bayer and you're listening to our interview show Gesprächszeit on our program Bremen 2. Today's guest is famous Turkish journalist Can Dündar, former editor-in-chief of Turkish newspaper Cumhuriyet, and today an enemy of the state because he published an article that proved that Turkish intelligence service delivered weapons to Syrian Islamists. Mr. Dündar, the Turkish government of President Erdogan has pressed charges against you and you could be sentenced to 35 years in prison in Turkey. That's why you live in Germany in exile. What's a typical day in exile for you?
Reading, writing, reporting, and of course trying to understand what's going on in Turkey. At the same time, of course, I am so much involved in German politics, German daily life. So now I have two countries to follow. But mostly, of course, I can do journalism here more freely than my own country. That's why I'm trying to do it from here. So we have a radio station and I've been doing some comments every day. So mostly journalism and writing.
You mentioned your radio station Özgürüz, which an exile media. You report about Turkey. You said you also read, you consume media news. That sounds pretty normal to me. Is living in an exile normal?
Of course, not normal because you are not based in your own country, so there is a distance which is considerably difficult to report about it. And at the same time, you have reporters in Turkey, you have your family members, so that's why you have to be kind of careful still. Even if you are in a free country, your loved ones are there, you have to take care of them, and you have to choose every word in a way, even if you feel free.
You said now it's easier for you to work as a journalist because obviously here the media is free in Germany, but you were still working as a journalist when you were in prison in Istanbul. So you were working, but I do understand the differences. But are there more differences? What's different to live in prison and living in a country where you kind of imprisoned as well because you can't go back to your home country?
It's really sad, but I feel that I'm not alone. I mean, during the 30s, for example, I was just reading the life story of Thomas Mann, for example. So he had to leave the country and his family warned him not to come back to Germany, as my family did to me. And he was sending messages via BBC and radio programs. So after 80 years, after Thomas Mann, I found myself doing the same thing in this, the 21st century. It makes me feel like in a big family of exile. It is difficult, but I know that in the end, we will prevail.
You're a Turkish journalist and very strong critique of the Turkish government and President Erdogan. And you wrote a book, Lebenslang für die Wahrheit. And in that book, you say, don't believe the greatest books are written with a nice view. What did you see when you wrote this book?
A wall. That's all. In fact, I was looking at a wall in my cell and there was nothing interesting, to be honest. But that encouraged your imagination. And when you found yourself in a solitary confinement, you have enough time to think about yourself, your country, etc. in a digital detox without any cell phone or nobody's locking your door. So you are all alone. So I try to use this opportunity, let's say, quote unquote, to improve myself and to write more, to read more. And it was a kind of education, let's say.
So you said digital detox. It sounds funny. And even though you were imprisoned, but you kept this humor throughout the whole book. It's Corridor A1, Prison Wing 9, Cell 5, and 25 square meters. And you called it a villa. Why did you call it a villa?
Because it was a kind of double room. And because it was for three people, but I was so dangerous, a terrorist, an agent, and an enemy of the state, that they should put me alone there. And my colleagues outside were campaigning for me and saying that solitary confinement is kind of torture. And then the government, pro-government media tried to correct this and saying that, okay, he's in a luxury living in a villa, which was true. I mean, it was a true a doubled room, and for a single person, it was not bad. But you have to think that you are just all alone 24 hours and nobody knows for how long.
You were imprisoned because in May 2015, as chief editor of the newspaper Cumhuriyet, a very, very well-known newspaper, and you published information that proved that the Turkish Secret Service brought weapons to Islamists in Syria. So that's where why you had to go to prison on your wedding day. So you and your wife, Dilek, you had to find new methods of seeing each other and also methods of intimacy. So you developed a finger kiss. What's a finger kiss?
Yeah, the finger kiss is a kind of kissing of the fingers behind windows. We were not allowed to touch each other because we were in a room separated by a window. So we were, our fingers were kissing each other from each side of the window. It's a kind of romantic thing, you know, like you are on the phone, but it's like a Skype call, let's say, which has become true after I came here. We were on Skype every day because she was not allowed to leave Turkey. Her passport was confiscated. So again, there was a window between us and we couldn't touch each other. We can only see each other and talk over the phone. But those kind of moments strengthen you and your relationship with your wife, because you're trying to find out other ways to understand each other. So we discovered how to give hidden messages because, you know, they are listening, of course, and tapping the whole conversation. So how can you give some hidden messages to her without let them understand it? So those kind of tricks were really interesting. And we found ways to get rid of those others to tap us.
After 3 months, you were freed from prison and then you had to leave Turkey. You came to Germany. Dilek wanted to visit you, but she wasn't allowed because officials confiscated her passport. So you had to find ways to be near each other, even though you were separated by borders. And you developed these hidden messages. So what kind of hidden messages were that?
Well, I mean, being in prison is not something foreign for journalists or writer or intellectual in Turkey. It's part of your life. But preventing your loved ones or family members from traveling was something new, which Erdogan government discovered. And they want me to go back to Turkey. And when I refuse, they decided to punish me by preventing my family members to come to Germany. And it was kind of difficult for us to live separated. And we were separated for 3.5 years. And she tried every way to get the permission to leave the country. And without no reason, they prevented her. There was no accusation against her, just being my wife. And in the end, she decided to leave the country in illegal ways. But how can she inform me about this? That was the problem. And imagine that, you know, that they are listening to the phone conversations and she had to tell me that she will leave the country illegally. But when, how, with whom, etc. So we had some keywords given to us by some people coming and going. And by using those keywords, we understand each other that day she will leave the country and I have to fly to Greece to take her from there. It's a game of words. But for a writer, it's interesting, of course. So they couldn't beat us with the words.
So there was a change of perspective, I think. At the beginning, you were the one that asked Dilek, so what do you think? Shall I leave? What shall I do? And she was held in Turkey for no reason. She was innocent. She didn't do anything wrong. And then there's this change of perspective where she says, all right, I'm about to do something illegal. I'm about to leave this country, even though I'm not allowed. So how was this for you talking about this when she asked you, shall I not?
It was quite difficult because you can be so brave for yourself and you can decide for yourself. But if you're thinking of for someone and that can destroy her life, of course you have to think twice. And it was not easy decision for me because I knew that it would be a very difficult travel and it can be risky and dangerous if she was caught by the Turkish authorities, then I wouldn't know what would happen. And imagine that I'm in Germany and she's in prison. That would be really horrible scenario. And at the same time, if she succeeded, then it would be very difficult for her to go back. She had family members, mother, father in Turkey, still so. And would she be able to see them again? So it was a really tough decision and she found herself in between being with her husband and her son, but on the other hand, leaving her mom and dad. So she made this decision and she came to Germany. But unfortunately, now she's away from her family and it's really sad.
I'd like to talk about this day in June last year when your wife, on the one side, tried to travel to you illegally, and you, on the other side, so to say, in safe, waited for her. Did you communicate while she was on this journey, and how did you feel throughout this day?
Oh, it was really a very tough day because I was expecting her, but I didn't know when and where she will be at that very special day. She gave me the code word. I knew that she was leaving the country, but where? And she turned off her phone. For a while, it was impossible for me to reach her. That was the advice of our lawyers. So don't communicate on the phone. She was leaving the country without passport. If she succeeded to pass the border, how can she apply to the authorities of the new country? How can she get in to Germany without a passport, etc.? There was many problems. So imagine, I mean, you studied in this country's universities and you worked as a journalist for years and all of a sudden you are just a refugee. But in the end, finally, I got the phone call from her saying that I'm safe and sound. I passed the border and I'm here. And then together with a friend, I went to meet with my wife. And after 3.5 years, we finally hug each other in the other side of the Aegean Sea.
Can Dündar is former editor-in-chief of Turkey's newspaper Cumhuriyet, and well, you published the proof that the Turkish intelligence service was delivering weapons to Syrian Islamists, and you paid with your freedom. When did you realize that you are not a free man anymore?
In jail, of course. My first night in jail, I realized that I can spend the rest of my life in jail because there are still many journalists spending 4 or 5 years without seeing a judge. So as long as there's no independent judiciary in Turkey, it's all in Erdogan's hands. So Erdogan said I would pay a heavy price for this new story. I thought that, okay, that's it. So prepare yourself that you may stay years in this small cell. But you know what? If you're a journalist in Turkey and you're challenging a leader like Erdogan, you should be prepared for the worst option, which is being killed or being jailed. So psychologically, and to be honest, physically, I was ready. So that's why it didn't take too much time for me to understand that I'm not a free man anymore. But I was writing, and writing means you're partly free.
So you fought back, yeah? You got parts of your freedom back. You're still working again, working on Turkish politics. Your wife is here now after being separated for 3.5 years. You can live in Germany, so to say, but what did you have to leave behind to become this part of your freedom back?
My country, of course, my loved ones, my profession, my house, my mom. So to be honest, I left 60 years of life behind. It was not easy, but on the other side of the coin, if you are not free, everywhere is jail for you. And if you are free to write, everywhere can be a Heimat for you. That's why I found Germany as a new home that I can write freely in it. And that's why it was not difficult for me to integrate. And I found a new family here. And most of the German people and colleagues, knowing what kind of a condition I'm in and what kind of a country I'm coming from and what kind of a leader I was dealing with. And really, I got a big support from my German colleagues especially. And then I thought, okay, this is the right place and this is the right moment to keep on struggling against this authoritarian regime in Turkey.
Are you feeling more anger or sadness when you think about this time?
I try to forget about my feelings and concentrate mainly on my struggle. That kept me safe in prison and that kept me busy in Germany. I mean, imagine yourself in a war and you can be wounded heavily, but you can't feel it, you know, at that moment. Then after the war is over or the clash is over, then you can find out that, oh, I'm bleeding. So it's more or less the same thing. I'm in a struggle now. I don't feel anything at all. Maybe in 10 years later, I would find out that, oh, come on, this heart is broken and bleeding. But I don't want to think about it at the moment. And I fully concentrate on my struggle.
So when war ends, that's either peace or there's an agreement that there's no shooting anymore. Nothing is there for you. There's no peace between you and the Turkish government. And you're being attacked every day. There are two security guards in front of this door right now. So what's the moment you suffered the most from being a journalist in Turkey to being a journalist in Germany?
Unfortunately, Erdogan's long hand is over Germany. So I felt that in the first day when I met with a taxi driver in Berlin who was an Erdogan supporter and start blaming me. So then I realized that, okay, Turkey is not that far away and I still have to deal with those clashes. If you are challenging a leader like Erdogan, there's no free and secure place for you. So you have to prepare for every kind of encounter. That's why sometimes I live under protection. Not only the Erdogan supporters here, but also Turkish intelligence is also so active in Germany. And Erdogan is a leader who can do everything to stop his opponents. But I feel that we are coming to the end of this dark period of time in Turkey's history. So I don't think that it would take so much time that I live under these circumstances.
So the Turkey asked Germany several times to bring you back to Turkey. There is there's a call for your name to be in prison again, and the attacks are coming. So what gives you this belief that this fight you're fighting for nearly 5 years now is over?
I guess Germany and other European countries nowadays especially understand better the position of Turkish government. They are promoting radicalism. They have fight and hatred against all of its neighbors. Greece, Russia, Syria, Cyprus, you name it, he has it. And he has a fight with European Union, he has a fight with the United States of America, he has a fight with Russia. And unfortunately, there's almost no country that he feels like a friend, except maybe Azerbaijan and nowhere else. And in domestic politics, he's losing his power. We can see it from the opinion polls. So there's no way out for him, internally and externally. And economy is failing. That's why he has to find out another way to stay in power. Otherwise, he's coming to the end of it.
You said several times, whether you were in prison, you were awaiting your trial, now here in exile, you said, I will never surrender? Who taught you not to back down?
History did. When I read history books, I can easily see that no authoritarian rule can stay forever. But of course, you have to struggle back and you have to be brave enough to challenge these authoritarians. And I feel like more optimistic when I read about them. And at the same time, I feel like in a big family of brave people who dare to change the history and who dare to challenge the autocrats. So that's not only me, but every people who believe in democracy should be rise up and say enough. And that's what I was trying to do. And that's what I will be doing in the coming decades if I have enough time. But if I have 10 days, I would love to spend that 10 days to fight for democracy.
So when did this start? Your personal fight for democracy. Did you also help the oppressed people basically when you were in school, for example?
No, not really. I mean, we didn't feel that much threatened before Erdogan. Of course, Turkish media was not the most democratic conditions. But after Erdogan, especially after the Gezi protest, we start feeling that an autocratic regime is coming and our borders is, you know, shrinking. So we can't breathe anymore. We can't write freely, etc. So then we understood that, okay, we have to do something to defend ourselves and to defend the people's right to know. From then on, they start, I mean, the media owners start firing us and we couldn't find anywhere to write, to speak, etc. And all of a sudden, we saw how he conquered all the media. And of course, together with the judiciary, together with the parliament, etc. And in 5 years, Turkish people realized that they lost everything they had in the name of democracy. And then, of course, some people decided to stay silent. Some people joined forces with Erdogan. And some people, like me, decided to fight back.
Today, you're a public enemy for Turkey, for the Turkish government, because you proved the things the Turkish intelligence service did. Is it true that your dad was working for the Turkish intelligence service as well?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a child, he was working, but he was not an educated man. That's why he was not a high rank position. He was just an ordinary worker there, and he didn't want to talk to me about what he's doing, but I knew that he was not doing something extraordinary there. But of course, I've never thought that I would be challenging the policies of Turkish intelligence service after 50 years.
So when you published this article, which made you go to prison and then come to Germany, about the Turkish intelligence secret service, your dad was already dead, unfortunately. But what would he have said if he knew?
It's hard to imagine, but he was a patriot, and most probably he wouldn't encourage me to publish something that would be harmful for my family, for myself. Because, I mean, publishing a story which the government would not like means automatically that you would have some troubles. Most probably he would try to stop me doing it. And I'm thinking of myself, if I would encourage my son to do something like this. Being brave for yourself is easy, but when you think about someone you love, someone from your family, of course you have to think twice about this.
So which role played politics and patriotism, how you were brought up then?
The aim of my life is not defending a country, but defending the truth. So if my country or my government is doing something wrong, then as a journalist, it's not my duty to defend the country, but it's my duty to defend the truth. So it's not about Turkey, Germany, United States. It's about right and wrong. It's about the truth and lie. So we have to decide between the two. And when I decide between the two, I always defend the truth against the lie.
Did anyone from your family tell you, though, until now, stop? Don't publish this article, or maybe don't tell the truth now from exile?
I'm kind of lucky that I have a brave mom and brave wife. So knowing that that would cause problems for all of us, they didn't tell me to stop, because they knew that without fight, you can't get your freedom back. And someone has to sacrifice himself, his family, his loved ones, etc. So knowing that it's a high price for them, they never told me that I should stop.
Did you ask yourself if you should stop?
When my loved ones has troubles, I told myself, was it worth it? Not in jail, not when I was attacked, not in when I was fired from my paper, but only when my loved ones had troubles because of me, I thought, should I stop? But then I talked to them and they said, don't worry about us. We are fine and we understand you. We are backing you. We support you. Let's go together. So since then, we've been fighting together.
How many times did you ask yourself the question, shall I return?
Never. Because I know that it's almost impossible to stay free, let alone stay alive in Turkey for me under these circumstances. So it's I know that as long as Erdogan is there, it's almost impossible for me to be in Turkey again. But all I'm trying to do is prepare the conditions for me to go back.
So you wrote a book in exile in Germany, Verräter, and at the end, the last sentence of this book is, this is not the end yet. What is the end? When can you return?
So when we do this interview in Istanbul, that will be the end for me. So we will host you there. And hopefully you will be asking the same questions and I'll be answering, look, I told you in Bremen that that would be the end. And now we came to the end point.
I'm really happy. I would love to come. Thank you for this invitation already. But let's put the humor aside and talk about the actual situation. So aren't you, with working with Özgürüz, for example, aren't you afraid that the measures from the Turkish government against you, your family, are becoming even stronger, or that you get attacked in Berlin, for example?
Well, they attacked me once, and thanks to my wife's courage, I survived from this attack.
That was when you had your trial, 2016, in front of the building where you had your trial in Turkey. Someone shot at you two times and you survived.
Exactly, that's the one. And when you saw a gun directed by a killer towards you, two things can be happened. One, you're scared and shut your mouth up and never talk again. Or you understood that life is so short and you can die right away, you know. So what happened to me is I don't scare anymore from nothing. So everything is possible. You can be jailed, you can be killed, etc. What's important is it worth it? So when I think about it, okay, they can kill me tomorrow, but what can I do till tomorrow? So this is the only idea in my mind. That's why, yes, it can cause a big trouble, my struggle, not only to me, but my loved ones as well. But someone has to pay the price. Someone has to take the risk. Someone has to fight. And thanks God, I'm not alone. There are thousands, millions of people struggling for democracy in Turkey today. And I'm proud of my people there. And I'm really sure that we are coming to the end of this dark period.
So Erdogan is still in power and he seems to be more powerful than before at the moment. So the price you paid, what did it do at the end?
But imagine Saddam Hussein, imagine Çavuşescu, all the powerful leaders of this region fall in one day. Especially after 18 years in power, I guess he can no longer govern the country. And that's the point, depend on several things. One, our power, our resistance, together with other people in Europe, for example. That's why I'm not that pessimistic, even knowing that he's still powerful. But as I told you, I mean, we know from the history that being powerful is not enough to stay in power.
So you write in this book, Verräter, you talk about the coup in summer 2016. And this puzzled me when I read this, because you said, luckily, the coup didn't work out. Why luckily? Because then Erdogan wouldn't have been in power anymore, probably. So why luckily?
Yeah, you're so right asking this question, because I understand that most of the people in Germany don't know much about Gülen movement. So I found not all of them, but especially the men in power of this sect are really dangerous guys using religion for their political cause. And I found them more dangerous than even Erdogan. Because with Erdogan, at least we are fighting against an official party, a leader. But here, you don't have anyone as a party member or a political leader or an organized political entity. It's a sect, you know. So using Islam, they conquer the whole judiciary, media, army, police force, etc. And it's a deep state in Turkey. So that would be more dangerous for us, I guess, to cope with it. So that's why in this fight, I didn't want each to prevail. But I don't want Erdogan to be got rid of by a military coup. It should be a democratic way.
Can you imagine Turkey being run not by Erdogan?
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, we are so close to it. We are so close to it. And imagine a country after 18 years of Erdogan rule. It's a generation already. And you don't have any means to defend yourself or resist the government. He has the power over the army, the police force, the academia, media, business, everything he's been controlling. And demonstrations are banned, and the parliament is under control of the government, and you can't read anything opposing him in Turkish media. And under these circumstances, this society is still fighting for secular, democratic Turkey. And I'm sure we will prevail in the end.
Can I, after this interview with you, as long as Erdogan is in charge, go to Turkey?
Well, you never know. I mean, you can, but they can blame you of interviewing me. There are different examples of it. And some people, you know, put our pictures in their Facebook account, and then they were asked at the borderline. Some people didn't have any problem. That's the problem in Turkey. I mean, you never know. The fear is there, and with this fear, you can't move freely. Let me tell you something. I was told that today there were many Turkish people wants to come to my talk in Bremen.
You're giving a talk after this interview in Bremen, that's what you're talking about.
Exactly. And they told me that many Turkish people wants to come to listen to me, but then they were told that they have to be registered because of the corona, I guess. And they had to give their address and phone numbers. And many people gave up after learning this, because that would cause some troubles in when they go to Turkey. And that is the saddest point, you know. That's even in Germany, in Bremen, they felt threatened. And that's the fear still over us.
If you weren't accused of being a spy in Turkey, if you didn't have to go to prison, if you wouldn't have to live in exile, what would you do the next week?
Oh yeah, I would go to a seaside in Mediterranean coast to write a novel. To be honest, this is my dream. And I hope when this turmoil ends, I will be doing this.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this interview. Turkish journalist Can Dündar was my guest in our show Gesprächszeit. And you can also listen to this interview in German on our audio platform, ARD Audiothek. I'm Julian Bayer. Thank you for listening.
Bremen 2, Gesprächszeit.